You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's Live Talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasso. Today we'll be speaking with Stephen Harper, coordinator of the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative, a coalition of groups whose sole objective is to end the death penalty for those who commit their offenses under the age of 18. He is currently on a leave of absence as coordinator of the Capital Litigation Unit in the Miami-Dade Public Defender's Office. Previously, he was an assistant public defender and served as the chief of the Juvenile Division from 1989 to 1995. He has written and lectured nationally on a variety of capital and juvenile topics. He currently serves as an adjunct professor at the University of Miami School of Law, where he teaches a course on juvenile justice. In addition, he is also active with the American Bar Association on death penalty initiatives. Today, he will discuss the death penalty for juveniles and recent trends in this area. Welcome to today's live talk, Mr. Harper.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I was hoping you would have some time today to talk with us about the status of juvenile death penalty in this country. And can you also give our audience a framework for how it's being used?
Yes. 38 states have the death penalty, and of those 38 states, only 22 permit the execution for persons who commit crimes under the age of 18. That's what we call a juvenile offender. It's the time of the crime. Now, those 22 states, 15 have juveniles on death row. And of those 15 states, only 7 have actually carried out executions since the death penalty was reinstated back in 1972. That's sort of the overall framework, and there's quite a bit of effort going on now amongst many of those states to actually end the juvenile death penalty.
So now, how many actually allow the death penalty?
Actually allow the death penalty?
For juveniles?
For juveniles, 22.
22.
Have it on the books.
Okay.
Only 7 have actually executed juvenile offenders in the last 30 years.
Okay. So, being used, but not widely.
Correct.
Now, there was a juvenile death penalty case, Stanford v. Kentucky, that recently came before the Supreme Court. They refused to take that, though. I was hoping you could comment on the court's decision and maybe also about whether the court might take one of these cases down the road.
Yes, and for those who are lawyers, this may not be very interesting and too complicated. But the way the Stanford case got to the Supreme Court was called an original habeas corpus petition. They haven't granted one of those petitions in over 80 years. So procedurally, it came to the court in a very odd way. And part of the reason why the court struck it was because of that. And so four justices, though, even though that was the case, four of the justices wanted to hear it now. And it normally only takes four justices of the United States Supreme Court to hear a case, to agree to hear a case. So there's no question that this issue in a different case is going to come back before the court. And the second thing is that Justice O'Connor, at least, if not Justice Kennedy, they look at the states, and when they banned the mental retardation, they found a mental retardation execution of those folks unconstitutional. They looked at the number of states that had been banning the execution of the mentally retarded, and I think that Justice O'Connor and Justice Kennedy are doing the same here. They're looking to see whether states are going to actually abolish the death penalty for juveniles, and a number of states in the upcoming legislative sessions are going to consider just that.
So they're kind of looking to see if the states are moving in that direction, then yes, they maybe take it after they've seen that.
Yes, they consider that the best way to measure evolving standards of decency, which is what defines cruel and unusual punishment, as far as the Supreme Court says.
Now, how closely tied are the issues of mental retardation being unconstitutional for the death penalty in juveniles?
Well, it's very interesting, because in the Atkins case, where they found ultimately that the execution of the mentally retarded was cruel and unusual punishment, they said that mentally retarded have disabilities in the areas of reasoning, judgment, control of their impulses, and do not act with a level of moral culpability that characterizes the most serious adult criminal conduct. It's interesting that they use the word adult, and when I asked a psychiatrist who treats the mentally retarded, he said, well, one of the ways that we measure who the mentally retarded are is we give them an age under 18. And so I think there's no question in terms of how culpable, or in other words, how guilty and how seriously they intend to commit crime. level of culpability, which is what our justice system punishes.
Right. What are the arguments for actually keeping this practice in place?
Well, there used to be an argument that it acted as a deterrent, although I don't think anybody that's in favor of the death penalty would seriously say that deterrence deters crimes, that the death penalty deters crimes, particularly when you're dealing with adolescents. But the main arguments are that we have to make the victims whole. In other words, that if somebody loses their loved one and goes through the trauma and the serious sadness of that, that one of the ways to accommodate them, to make them feel better, is to actually punish the offender. The other one is that it's public safety, that if we execute people, obviously they will never commit a crime again. And those seem to be the two major arguments these days in favor of the death penalty, and those arguments are also filtered down to the juvenile offenders as well.
Now, are there organizations that might support the death penalty but oppose it for juveniles? Does that come together at all?
I'm not aware of organizations that support the death penalty, although I'm aware of some interesting individuals. Former FBI Director William Sessions and the former Oklahoma City prosecutor both support the death penalty, but they have come out in opposition to the death penalty for juveniles. Similarly, the American Psychiatric Association and the American Bar Association have no policy with respect to the death penalty in terms of its actual implementation, but they do have policies against the juvenile death penalty.
Now, what is your group's position on juvenile death penalty? Can you talk about that a little bit, and what do you think the limits ought to be?
Well, our position, for starters, is simply that, and we're only focusing on offenders under 18 years of age, because that's what international law, national law, and many laws define as adulthood. So we're only focusing on that, and obviously our position is that anybody who commits an offense under the age of 18 should not be eligible for the death penalty. That certainly is the international law and international standards, and certainly in many, many ways we treat juveniles under the age of 18 very differently than we treat people over the age of 18, and that's our limit.
Okay.
That's our bright line.
And you actually just referred to this perspective internationally, but there are only a few countries that actually permit this, is that right?
That's absolutely correct. Interestingly enough, there's a UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which, among other things, bans the death penalty for offenders under 18. Only the United States of America and Somalia have not signed that, have not ratified that treaty. Secondly, in the last 15 years, the United States has executed more juveniles than all the other countries of the world combined. Iraq, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Pakistan are the only countries that have executed juveniles in the last few years. Iraq, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Pakistan all say because of the UN treaty, they will no longer do it. So we really are alone in this practice.
And that's the only reason we're not signing the treaty?
Well, there are other reasons, other concerns apparently that members of the Senate have, but President Clinton signed it, and there are others in international law, and I'm not an expert in international law, say that once you sign a treaty, you should adhere to it. But I think there are other concerns. I think one of those concerns is that there would be too much international tampering with decisions like what to do with a dependent child, for example.
I see. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Stephen Harper, coordinator of the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative, about the use of the death penalty for juvenile offenders. Stephen, let's talk about public opinion and how it relates to the use of the juvenile death penalty. And we have a really high-profile case in Maryland recently with a sniper who is under the age 18. How do you think that will play in terms of what happens with the juvenile death penalty?
Well, let's talk about public opinion, at least before
the
recent case, because it's hard to tell how the recent case will affect it, whether in the short term or the long term. But certainly public opinion over the last 5 years has, interestingly enough, been very, very steady on this issue. The Houston Chronicle did a poll about 3 years ago, a national poll, and found that overall support for the juvenile death penalty was only at 28%. While over 50% of the Americans supported the overall death penalty, that is for adults, not for juveniles. About 6 months ago, the Gallup organization did a similar poll and found that the support for juveniles' death penalty was only 28%. So there's a huge number of Americans Republicans in all the polls that say that they're against it for the juveniles. In Kentucky, a recent poll showed that 80% of Kentuckians were against the death penalty for offenders under the age of 18.
Hmm.
Now, who knows what the Maryland case will do with all of this, but one of the fascinating things, and we don't know a lot about the juvenile offender in this, but one of the fascinating things is that the case illustrates many of the kinds of points that adolescent psychologists and psychiatrists have been making for years, that is that kids are far more impressionable, far more less culpable, and far more impulsive, and are much more dependent on adults. And this particular kid, as we've been finding out, it was a very weird relationship that he had with this older man. This was the first person that had actually taken care of him, actually fed him, and who knows what else we'll find out. But one of the other questions is if the adult father is far more culpable than the juvenile, should they receive the same punishment?
Right. I guess we'll have to sort of wait and see what happens with that.
Well, it's definitely created a lot of public attention, and we'll see how it all falls out. But it's certainly clear in my mind that there are going to be some very powerful arguments and a lot of research going into who this kid was and how he got there.
And this juvenile could face the death penalty in a couple of states, but not in a couple of others.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Alabama has a juvenile death penalty, as does Virginia. Maryland does not, and there seems to be some sort of, even some of the prosecutors I've seen on television have sort of said it's rather ugly to be publicly forum shopping, as lawyers call it, to find a state that would punish the juvenile without, you know, maybe dealing with the people in Maryland who suffered the most.
Right. Can you also talk today about the death penalty in general? It seems, as you said, public opinion is kind of waning a little bit, even though we've had sort of a few states that have had a lot of executions, but sort of overall, what do you think the future holds for the continued use of the death penalty?
Well, it's interesting, again, that, you know, if you want to get into the European Union, you cannot have the death penalty. Turkey is in the process of abolishing it. And so internationally, there's a very, very different view on the death penalty than we have here in the United States. But I think that the United States is going to continue to have the death penalty in general for some time. But certainly in the last few years, particularly the discovery from DNA and other kinds of studies, that there are a number of innocent people on death row. And that has certainly created a reevaluation of how well we're implementing it, how well people are being represented at trial, the kinds of mistakes that are being made. And I think that overall reevaluation of the death penalty is still going on. And I think that that's going to lead to some reforms. For example, that's why I think that had a lot to do with getting rid of the death penalty for the mentally retarded. I think it's going to have an effect on the death penalty for the mentally ill, and I hope it has an effect on the death penalty for juveniles. But I think the juvenile death penalty, excuse me, the death penalty overall is here to stay for some time to come.
Right. And juvenile death
penalty? Well, it's hard to say, but it's going to be a number of legislatures. In Florida, for example, a Republican-controlled Senate abolished it last year, and it did not pass the House, but it's going to come back this year. Texas, believe it or not, the House in Texas 2 years ago passed the bill. It did not pass the Senate, but it's going back. A number of states that you would not necessarily think it would be in the front are reconsidering the juvenile death penalty. Kentucky's another one, Arizona, and they're all going to be seriously considering this bill this year. So I would say in about 6 months, we'll have a much better sense of where the juvenile death penalty is going.
Great. Well, thanks so much for the update. We very much appreciate it. That concludes today's live talk. And to learn more on this issue, be sure to read the articles featured this week on www.corrections.com. Thank you, Stephen Harper, coordinator of the Juvenile Death Penalty Initiative, for participating in the program today.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to have this talk. Thanks also to the audience for tuning in. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.